This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Despite its unprecedented profits, big oil is on the decline. Meanwhile, petrostates like Kazakhstan and Russia are demanding and obtaining more control over their own oil fields and increasingly marginalizing the once omnipotent oil majors. This is what my guest journalist Steve Levine writes in his blog. He also has a lot to say about how oil figures into Vladimir Putin's politics and how Putin is trying to position himself on the Iranian nuclear issue. In Levine's new book, The Oil and the Glory, he reports on the struggle for control of oil in the Caspian region and how that has changed the energy industry and geopolitics. The countries that border the Caspian Sea are Russia, Iran, Kazakhstan, Turkmenistan, and Azerbaijan. Steve Levine covered Central Asia and the Caucasus for 11 years. He ran the Wall Street Journal Bureau for the region and before that covered it for the New York Times. After September 11th, he did some work with Daniel Pearl and later helped investigate Pearl's kidnapping and beheading. He was portrayed in the film A Mighty Heart. Steve Levine, welcome to Fresh Air. How much oil is at stake in the Caspian Sea?
There's a minimum of 30 billion barrels of recoverable oil in the entire Caspian, and probably much more. And a way of understanding that is that when the biggest fields come online finally in the next 5 or 10 years, there will be approximately 5 million barrels of oil per day coming onto the world market from there. And that's the difference between surplus and shortage on the world market, which is where prices go up or down. And so it's really a very important volume.
So tell us more about how the future of oil can be changed by the Caspian Sea.
There are a couple of things. One is that the Caspian, again, is this player on the margin. It's a region that's not connected to the Persian Gulf. And so it's not vulnerable to the politics, to the wars, to that whole cauldron of events going on all over the Middle East. And so in that, it's an independent source of oil. It is a pro-Western, a strongly pro-Western area. And so it will play along with the politics that the West tends to play. And in addition, in a sense that I think everyone can understand, it's the last hurrah, really, of big oil. This is a region that has straddled the era when big oil made policy, brought governments to power all over the world. And now, when big oil is really weak and is in a decline, really, it's deceptive. It looks like it's very powerful. The profits are so big, but it really is. It's in a slow decline right now.
You know, you say that the countries on the Caspian Sea are pro-Western, but one of the countries is Iran, and another is Russia. Iran is definitely not pro-Western, and Russia, it's sometimes hard to tell like where they are. So it's more ambiguous than that, don't you think?
Well, sure. But when we speak of Caspian oil, really, it's true Russia and Iran are on that sea. But the oil that we're talking about is from the other three states surrounding that sea, Kazakhstan, Turkmenistan, and Azerbaijan. And it's their oil and their natural gas that will make this difference. And the U.S., for a number of years, has put itself as a strategic policy behind them to make sure that their energy gets to the West.
Now, in looking at oil and the Caspian Sea, let's look for a moment at Russia and Iran. Does their relationship become clearer if you look at oil?
Sure. It seems pretty clear to me what they're all about. They are both trying to be voices and powers on the world stage. They both see themselves as historically and culturally important players in the world, and they want to be seen that way now, and they resent the United States having this superpower, unipower position in the world, and they have linked together on a number of issues, the main one being oil, another one being nuclear power, in order to assert their voice in the world.
I want to quote you something that Garry Kasparov said on Bill Maher's show, Politically Incorrect, last week. And, you know, for our listeners who haven't been following Kasparov, who up until this point was most famous as a chess master, is now very famous as a dissident in Russia, and he is running for president and is being very outspoken against against Putin. So he said on Friday night, Bush tried to play psychiatrist and look at Putin's eyes, searching his soul instead of looking at his record. And now Putin is spitting in Bush's face by making his open friendship with Ahmadinejad. But Putin has only one item in his political agenda. He needs high oil prices. And tension in the Middle East helps him to keep oil prices high. So that's why he sells nuclear technology to Iran. He sells missiles to Hezbollah and Hamas via Syria, because it helps Putin stay in power. If the oil price goes down, Putin goes down. What do you make of that analysis? Do you think that that's an accurate analysis?
Well, I think it's self-serving to a certain degree for Kasparov, certainly. But there's a kernel of truth there, the kernel being that what Russia is today, what Putin is today, is a reflection of high oil prices. Russia is a new power on the world stage because it has so much money. His analysis that somehow Putin is conspiring to keep them high, to keep there being tension in the Middle East and between the West and Iran, I think that goes a little bit over the top. But the essence of what he says, that Putin is spitting in the face of the West and the basis of his power, this is true. And the other thing is that it's really a long point that one has to understand. When you look at the last 15 years, when you look at what Russia and the United States have been through on the Caspian Sea, the conflict, the struggle for geopolitical power in that region, this is all about Russia doing exactly that. And Putin is the manifestation of the current change in geopolitics.
So oil profits have really changed the Russian economy and the life of middle-class Russians.
There are two components here. One is, what have high oil prices done for the average Russian? And it's true that Russians are living better than they ever have. They have more money, they have more disposable income, and this is one of the main reasons why Putin is so popular at home and why he can carry out the kind of politics, domestic and overseas politics, that he does. But the other component is, it is extremely popular at home to go around, as Kasparov said, spitting in the face of the West. They love this. The whole idea of making the United States uncomfortable around the world, this plays very well at home. And look, the Russians and that whole former Soviet region, they're not friends with Iran. They're as nervous as the West is about Iran. Really, this is what you hear when you're there, but it is convenient for Putin, with his geopolitical aspirations, to ally with Iran on these questions.
Why is it convenient for him? What does he get from it?
Iran is the American hot button. Nothing sends Dick Cheney or George Bush into a frenzy than Iran. The whole question of Iran and the nuclear weapons, and they cannot stand that Ahmadinejad goes around sticking his chest out and poking his eye in the West, and by Putin allying with Ahmadinejad and Ahmadinejad allying with Putin, it makes both of them stronger. And specifically on the oil question, they are to a certain degree halting or slowing development of oil in these other Caspian nations by allying, by telling these other republics, for example, you cannot install a pipeline crossing the Caspian Sea, delivering Kazakhstan's enormous oil reserves and Turkmenistan's enormous natural gas reserves to Europe, which would help to change the geopolitical balance in Europe and help the United States there. And because they ally, they have managed, at least for now, to halt the construction of this very important pipeline.
So as the story with Iran continues to play out, what are you looking for when you look at the relationship between Russia and Iran?
I'm curious at Putin's approach to Iran and the other republics, a meeting that happened a week ago between them where Putin made a big show about demonstrating that he was Iran's friend, very public friend. We will not serve as a staging ground to attack you. I just wonder if Putin craves international recognition. He wants to appear like the bad boy abroad because it plays so well at home. But at the same time, Russia historically and Russia now has always craved the respect and felt that it never got it. Imagine if Putin were able to broker a deal that satisfied the United States and Europe and satisfied Iran on the nuclear question. How he would look. He would look like a hero, and he would finally win the deference to a certain degree, diplomatic deference, abroad. He would be a real player rather than a gadfly. And I've had this sneaking suspicion that this is what he's after.
My guest is journalist Steve Levine. His new book is called The Oil and the Glory, The Pursuit of Empire and Fortune on the Caspian Sea. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. If you're just joining us, my guest is Steve Levine. He's the author of the new book, The Oil and the Glory, The Pursuit of Empire and Fortune on the Caspian Sea. He reported from that region for 11 years. For the last three, he ran the Wall Street Journal's bureau there. He also reported from there for the New York Times. There have been meetings going on between a consortium of the big oil companies, the big Western oil companies, and Kazakhstan over this giant oil field in Kazakhstan called the Kashagan oil field. What's the importance of this oil field, and what are the negotiations about?
Well, the importance of the field, the Kashagan field, is that it's the largest oil discovery anywhere on the planet. In the last 30 or 40 years, it is a field, enormous field, with at least 13 billion barrels of, just to make that clear, a giant oil field. This term giant is 1 billion barrels. So here you have 13 times that in this one field. And that's the main significance. And the big oil companies love this field. This is a chance for them, first of all, to have a lot of oil, but also oil men are not just in this game for the money, or else they could go into banking. The engineers and the geologists, these are romantics, and they see a lot of romance about this field. And the current negotiations are a national conflict. The oil companies are at least 5 years behind their contractual commitment for delivering the first oil from the field. They're more than twice over budget on the spending. And this really irritates the Kazakhs because it means that all of these plans that they've made for building the country, for spending and for lining pockets, is delayed for at least 5 years. But it's also, in a larger sense, it's an assertion. It's a phenomenon that we're seeing today. These countries like Venezuela and Russia and now Kazakhstan that are far more assertive on the world stage and at home regarding ownership of their natural resources. This is the latest example of that. And these oil companies are having to mollify the Kazakhs, and it's also a sign of the times. We are seeing the last years, really the last decade or two, of these big oil companies as we know them today. And this negotiation really, it illustrates that changing of the guard, where the big petrol powers in the world are going to be states, Kazakhstan, Russia, Venezuela, the Saudis, and not Exxon and Chevron and BP and Shell.
So the oil companies aren't writing the rules. The countries are more and more trying to write the rules and telling the oil companies what they can do and what they can't and what they're expected to achieve?
Yes. Yes, that's exactly right. And really, the best window into this phenomena, this dynamic that's going on right now, is this negotiation over the Kazakhstan field. It's really what's happening is that the oil companies are being turned into employees. They are, in our lifetimes, not going to be swaggering, testosterone-driven companies. They are going to be mousy employees of state oil companies like the Kazakhstan oil company.
Several of the Caspian states and the United States would like to see a pipeline built for Caspian oil that would bypass Russia. Why do Caspian states and the United States want to see that happen?
The short answer is that Russia has spent the whole post-Soviet period strangling the economies of Central Asia, of the Caucasus, of these Caspian states. And the way that it's done it is through its control of most of the natural gas and oil pipelines leaving the region going to the west. Kazakhstan, Turkmenistan, and Azerbaijan cannot export a single barrel of oil or a cubic meter of natural gas without crossing into Russia. Azerbaijan is in a better place. It has an independent pipeline, but Turkmenistan and Kazakhstan are really stuck. And so the idea is to build an independent natural gas pipeline and possibly a companion oil pipeline leading from Turkmenistan across the sea, the Caspian Sea, going west to Azerbaijan and then on to Europe. The idea being that this provides financial, economic independence to these states and therefore political independence.
There's a picture in your book of Kazakhstan's new capital that was built with oil money, and it's incredible looking. I mean, why don't you describe a little bit about what Kazakhstan has done with some of its oil wealth in giving the country, or at least parts of it, a new look?
The president of Kazakhstan, Nursultan Nazarbayev, decided, like a lot of new presidents do in small countries around the world, I'm going to move the capital. He has a Peter the Great complex and wanted to build a new capital on the steppe, and he did. Astana is the name, and it looks like Disneyland. It was a malarial, swampy, windswept, flat, just horrendous place. This was the capital of Khrushchev's Virgin Lands program. It's a place where you wouldn't want to go, and he decided this was going to be the place. And at first, it was kind of a joke. Back in the 90s, it was a Potemkin village. They plastered vinyl on the fronts and the sides of the buildings fronting the main boulevard running through town, so it would look new. But then you go around the back of the building, on the other side of the building, and it's the old, decrepit look. And you walk two blocks from the center, and people have no heat, no electricity, and there are cows and goats everywhere, and huge mosquitoes. But over time, it is amazing. It is a very impressive place, depending, you know, what your taste is in architecture. And if you wanted to do a deal, an oil deal, during the late 1990s and the, after 2000, Nazarbayev made you put money, tens of millions of dollars, into the fund to make the capital.
So are those vinyl facades there now, or was that before the capital was remade?
No, that's when the capital was declared, when it was Astana was declared the new capital. This was the first thing that was done, the vinyl. Now, I say that's changed. They've got the vinyl all the way around the buildings now. but for a long time, yeah, that's how it looked.
Mm-hmm. Steve Levine, thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you, Terry.
Steve Levine's new book is called The Oil and the Glory, The Pursuit of Empire and Fortune on the Caspian Sea. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.